Welcome to the New Mind Creator Podcast with your host, Maurice, the New Mind Creator. Today, I will be interviewing Kat McLeod. Please make sure to hit the subscribe button so that you'll receive alerts when new episodes are available each week on Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time.
I've never been hiking before. I know you enjoy outdoor sports and the beach as well, but how was that experience, hiking?
Well, I am shocked to hear that because it's so much part of my life. I love hiking. It's so wonderful being out in nature. Last week, we took my son, and some of the trails we go on, you can have a full panoramic ocean view during your hike, so you get the best of both worlds, enjoying the ocean and running up a hill, climbing over rocks and boulders. It's really fun.
So have you always been adventurous like that?
I grew up in the Midwest. We did not have mountains then, and it was really cold, so I was not able to go out as much as I enjoyed, and my parents were definitely not outdoorsy. Since I've lived in California for over 20 years, I've been very outdoorsy. I love being outside, and the weather here is so conducive to having an amazing outdoor lifestyle.
Yeah, I love California. I lived there for a little while. And at first the weather, it like burned my skin because it was blazing hot during the daytime. And then at night, the temperature dropped like 30 degrees or so. And I noticed it burned me, but after I got used to the weather, I was fine.
You were a newbie.
Yeah, I had to get tough. Yeah, I had to get tough. So what got you into being an entrepreneur?
I feel like I've always been an entrepreneur. I was the child selling door-to-door iced tea and candy bars. I sold lollipops to my friends in high school. I believe I was just made to be an entrepreneur. I've been an entrepreneur my entire adult working life.
Anyone in your family did demonstrated that for you?
Yes, my mom did. My mom owned several side businesses. She had a normal working job too, and she did not like it. And her father, my grandfather, who I never met, he passed away before I ever met him. He was a very successful entrepreneur.
Wow. What's his business?
He owned a coal mine. This was a long time ago.
Oh, okay. Yeah, those were, I'm sure, pretty lucrative, you know, time ago. Wow. So you always enjoy entrepreneurship. So do you think being an entrepreneur is something that must be within you, or can you gain those skills needed to be successful?
I'm so glad you asked that question before I deter any listeners who are like, oh, I didn't do that when I was a kid. I truly believe that you can gain the skills. Most of my clients, I would say 80%+, gain the skills way later in life. At this point, usually after motherhood, because they did not want to work in a 9-to-5 anymore. And it is a skill. Some of us do have it innately. And I would guess that I'm just going to be truthful. It's probably easier on us. It doesn't mean that we don't do the work. It just means our brains are more wired for that. And beyond that, it's absolutely learned like anything else.
So do you, I guess mothers or stay-at-home moms would have some interesting obstacles to overcome to being an entrepreneur. Is it still possible for them to thrive in business?
I am a living example of thriving in business while being a full-time mom, and the many, many, many clients I've helped are an example of that, because you can build your business to fit your lifestyle. So while the kids are in school, and that means being really diligent on time blocking, knowing what your next steps are, really getting stuff done, being efficient, knowing what your client acquisition activities are and completing them.
So This is one thing I've noticed. So I love reading biographies and autobiographies because I love hearing the stories of people who achieve greatness. So it's always something they had to overcome. So what did you have to overcome to be successful and to thrive in business?
It's not only, I'll just talk about life. I've overcome in a very abusive household where I feared that I was going to be murdered and I was beaten on a regular basis. And I escaped that household and was in the adult industry. I owned a men's fetish business as one of my first businesses. I actually started out as a dominatrix. I'm just making it shorter and niched into a men's fetish business. And I made a lot of money at a very young age. At the age of 22, I was making multiple six figures, bought my first home in Los Angeles at the age of 23, but I hated what I was doing. I was making high profit, but I really felt I was not living a meaningful life. I could not imagine that this was all that life was going to yield for me. I hated it, yet I stayed in it for many, many years because I was so used to the money. And that was something I had to overcome, releasing that. And during that time, I had major depression and a severe eating disorder. So I would say I was quite messed up. I didn't do any drugs, but I was quite messed up beyond the drugs in my early to mid 20s. And I had to be willing to walk away from that really lucrative business and go into the unknown. So I went to get my master's in psychology so I could help other women like myself. And as my second year graduate school project, I chose helping women transition out of the adult industry into high profit entrepreneurship. And I added in the piece of high purpose because we had already been used to making hundreds, if not thousands of dollars an hour. And I knew it was vital, like vital for our well-being and sustainability to add in the purpose. And now that I work, so I've shifted, that was over a decade ago. Since I became a mom, I shifted to working only with moms and I added in my third P, pleasure. So it's profit, purpose, pleasure, because anyone who's a parent knows that it is a fulfilling but exhausting job that depletes a lot of energy. So adding in that pleasure piece has made a humongous difference in my business and the business of all of my clients.
So what is, how do you help people understand their purpose, or should they already understand it before they come to you?
We look at their existing skills, talents, and gifts and the audiences that they want to serve. So purposeful work is defined by me as work that you feel good about doing, that you're not ashamed of, that you feel proud of, that you feel like you're helping other people, that you just feel good about. That's what purposeful work is. I don't believe in this one major purpose of your entire life. I would say I have a purpose, and I spent my entire 20s and much of my 30s like searching really diligently, like, what's my purpose? What's my purpose? And I realized you can have different purposes in life. And the purpose in my life right now is to live in pleasure, add in joy, take care of my family, and help as many women as I can. Especially, I have a soft spot for women who are coming from a difficult situation, such as an abusive relationship, home, maybe they did drugs, whatever, maybe they worked in the sex industry, whatever it is, and letting them truly know that they can create a life that they feel really, truly good about.
So how were you, what was the process in you overcoming that trauma that you experienced, multiple traumas, it sounds like, because when something happens to us, especially a traumatic event, it's imprinted upon our subconscious mind, and our reaction to certain things that mimic that trauma, we respond to it. It's an innate response. So we have to now reset our subconscious mind and put something different there. How was that process for you? How were you able to do it?
In my 20s, I didn't have that wherewithal, like the one that you're really elegantly speaking. I went to therapy twice a week and I tried hypnotherapy and I read a lot of self-help books. And so I had that innate drive to heal myself, and it was really messy. And that made a big difference. All of those combined for years and me just putting one step in front of the other. And then I think that I really blossomed when I quit my fetish business and I was no longer doing something that I felt ashamed about. And that made a huge difference in my mental health. And then transitioning into helping women and other people start businesses and feeling good about the work I was doing made all the difference. And to this day, I still work on my mental health. I still positive journal pretty much daily. I actively work on my happiness. So I think about what in my life I want to improve or what my goals are. For instance, my New Year's resolution, I did it by quarters, and this quarter was a level 8 self-love. And that might sound a little like, oh, woo-woo, or not important, but it is vital for business success to trust yourself and just vital for life to feel good about yourself. So that's why I chose that as my quarter resolution. And I also get coaching on adding pleasure into my business. I believe in coaching, and I still talk to a therapist on a weekly basis.
Oh, so that definitely explains how you've been able to overcome and thrive in life. It sounds like you're living your best life.
I walk my walk. I do a lot of self-help. I love reading books and podcasts that make me feel better about myself. And I am definitely not perfect. If I don't watch it, I can definitely fall down a spiral of negative thinking. So that's why I have to actively train my brain, and it's a work in progress. And yes, I will say that I have created a dream life for myself for a minimum of the last decade. I'm in a really happy marriage. My husband would never lay a hand on me. Loving family, and it feels really good. And it was messy, and it took a lot of work.
Yeah, that's the proof that you've done the inner work, because our inner state often reflects our outer circumstances. So you being able to be in a healthy relationship reflects the inner work that you've been doing. So you does your past give you credibility with the women that you're helping?
I believe it does. Strangely, most of my clients, I think all of my clients that are moms, none of them were ever in the adult industry. Not that that's strange. It's just that they're still attracted to me because I use it as part of my brand. And I pretty much use it like this. I helped women transition out of the adult industry. I can bloody help you. And that attracts my people because, number one, I'm very blunt. So if you need somebody to soft pedal everything, then I'm not your woman. I'm very supportive, very loving, and I call it how I see it, and I give tough love. Like, all my clients know that I give tough love with love, though. I give it with love. I usually give kisses before I deliver blows and then kisses afterwards, and then we work on it. I don't believe in delusion, and like we just talked about, I've faced a lot of stuff in my life, so I don't believe in living in delusion likeness. We just have to face it and move on. And often that means when people start working with me, not often, I would say 40 to 50%, it means that their businesses were never going to be profitable, or the business that they came to me with, and we have to shift it, and they have to be willing to mourn that and go after what they truly want, which is what they really want, is a high profit, high purpose, and high pleasure business. Once they mourn the loss, they can move on. And then that's how we create great results.
So once a person is able to pinpoint that their gifts and their purpose, is it safe to say you could make profit as long after you find that you can make it profitable?
Okay, so this is a fallacy. Passion and competence does not equal profit. It's so important. I say this frequently. Passion and competence does not equal profit. You must make sure that your business is profitable right from the start. I do that with just over 13 years of business coaching, but your listeners can do this with competitive analysis, use Google or whatever search engine you have and research your competition. Make sure there's others doing what you want to do and that they are making the money that you desire for the lifestyle that you truly want for yourself, for your vision for yourself. So a lot of people do think because something's a passion of theirs, they're going to make money from it. And that's why they wind up spending years, literally years, on a business that was never going to be profitable. I would say a lot of my moms fall into this trap. This can look like a blogging, jewelry making. One of my clients in one of my group programs, her original idea, luckily she didn't start it, she really wanted to work with a certain population of small town ladies. However, these people's mortgages were less than she desired for coaching, and it wasn't a lot. She wasn't being crazy. She wanted a certain amount a month, and this was never going to get her there. She would have to be working her butt off, and she wanted to be mom first, of course, because all of my people are mom first. So I encouraged her that if you want to do this, you're going to have to lower your monthly revenue goals, or you're going to pick something that's going to be profitable. It was disappointing, but we arranged that she could still give value to this population that she felt drawn to by doing it as a passion project, offering them a gift of her love. It's not her business. It's a side passion project.
So am I getting this correct? So you should be thinking about the profit first.
I believe in all three P's, and I do like profit first. So this might be a little confusing because as I did share in my story, I made a lot of profit and I was not happy at all. And so were my original business coaching clients. So profit is really important. However, you must add in the purpose and the pleasure. So if just having high profit is not enough, on the flip side, making peanuts in your business that you expend a lot of energy on is not profitable, is also not pleasurable. And in the long run, you're going to wind up not doing it. You're going to shut down. If you're making peanuts, that feels bad. So I believe in businesses that feel amazing, that bring in high profit for the time spent, that are purposeful and pleasurable. I believe that you need all three for a really long lasting, sustainable business.
Who's been your biggest cheerleader throughout your life and the achievements that you've garnered? I know it sounds like you've been, a self-motivator for most of your life, but even in life, life tends to have some valleys, some hills, and, it's not a straight line, linear. So who has been that person or people?
When I was 21, 22, I had a boyfriend, and he and I did not work out, but we were best friends. Like, we lived together for years after we stopped dating, and he was my full-time assistant in my fetish business, and he was always there for me. And then I also had my answer is I always had good best friends. Oh, excuse me, I have to clear my throat. And I also had a best friend, a female best friend at the time period. And I always have attracted solid best friends. So that must be with the inner work. And right now I have an amazing husband for the last decade and an amazing best girlfriend. So I do surround myself with very positive, supportive, loving, reliable, stable people.
What are some things that you've noticed that some people or mothers in you are helping a lot of mothers. So what are some things that you've noticed that have made them feel that they can't achieve the goals that they are seeking?
So much stuff. By the time my people come to me, they're usually in a lot of pain and do not believe that they can do it. So you would think that they would hire me because they think they can do it. And part of them does think that, because otherwise they wouldn't. But a lot of stuff. First of all, a lot of the businesses geared towards moms, busy moms, are what I call online low profit businesses. And that's number one, a mom trap. So what happens is they wind up spending months, if not years, working on a business that was never going to be profitable. I brought up blogging. It's not to poo-poo on anyone. It's just to say that tons of moms try to do blogs and they wind up making no money and spending all this time. And then they feel like it just wasn't for them or they couldn't do it. Or other profit businesses. For instance, one of my clients, she spent an entire over a year trying to make click funnels for a population, but she failed to test the population. She took a course. She saw other people doing it. It wasn't her true expertise. She did that and she didn't make money. Again, another one of my clients, my current client who actually edits my podcast, she spent over a year trying to make websites. And the truth is that just is not an expertise of hers. She took a course. This is so normal. Moms think that they need to learn a new skill and then they try to do it and they're not experts and they don't feel like experts and they can't charge the premium profit. So she took a course in the website design and her website design is decent. It's adequate, but it's never going to be the high-end website design unless she puts a lot of energy into it. But guess what? She had a master's in music, 12 years of audio editing, played in an orchestra since she was a child, but she was told by former employers that she could never do anything with that music. It wasn't employable. So she had that in her mind. When we really dove into her skills and then we paired it to what was profitable and she feels good about, boom, instant, like easy first paying client. After a year of struggling online, she landed a first paying client within a few days and I hired her to do my podcast editing. Why wouldn't I hire somebody with that much expertise?
It seems like oftentimes people have the answer right in front of them or it's so effortless that they think that, no, this can't be the thing that could catapult me in financially and also recognition.
That is so true. Often people either have way too many skills and they are running around like chickens because they don't know which one and they're offering like 20 different things, which confuses the audience. That's why niching is so important. You really want to pinpoint your perfect business idea. Offering a bunch of stuff is not going to get you more clients. It's actually going to get you less. And then there's the other flip side where people think they have no skills. And that's because what our greatest skills and strengths, it comes so easily to us that we don't even recognize that we could get paid for them, because why would anyone pay us for something that comes so easily? And the truth is it comes easily to us. So for instance, I'll give two major examples. One is organizing. For somebody who's organized, I'm organized. This feels like, why would anyone pay me to get organized when that Marie Kondo lady's making a fortune organizing people's lives? Because we all know people who just are, they need help. And then on the other end, one of my clients came to me with way too many offers and it was confusing her audience. And she actually got nobody to sign up with her because her message wasn't clear what she offered. And she had a skill of doing technology stuff, a certain software program at work that she learned from her corporate job. We niched her into just that. And she got her first paying client within weeks, her second paying client within, I think, a week or two after that, her third within a week after that, and then had to go to a wait list.
Wow. That's amazing. That just what she already had, it just needed to be organized. She needed to be intentional, more intentional about specific things that she was doing. And you were able to help her do that. So go ahead.
I'm really grateful for her because she had tried on her own for a year and a half. She was willing to trust me to release all the other offers and to really go in deep. So I think with a lot of new business owners, they are afraid to go in deep. So they go in wide. And by that, I mean that you want to offer everything that you can do. And this is very common because you don't want to turn away any potential clients and you want to make as much impact as possible. And what really happens is your audience is confused. They don't think that you're the specialist. You're making less of an impact. And I'll associate this with medical. If you need a very intricate, let's just say brain surgery, I hope no listener ever needs that. You are not going to go to the ER doctor and go in and check yourself in for brain surgery. You're going to go to a specialist and you're going to pay more. The specialist charges a lot more. And that's the same thing in business.
Right. That is correct, because nobody would probably go into a doctor's office that specializes, that say they specialize in brain surgery, but yet they have in the waiting room, they are working on cars in the waiting room, you know? So,
yeah.
So the specialty and really becoming specialized in something or known for something is, I guess you could say that's advertisement in itself as well, because people would be like, oh yeah, if you need this, you definitely need to see this particular person.
Exactly. And that makes it so much easier for your people to find you and you to, like, you, the listener is the you, and you to own your little piece of the online world or the business world, because there is plenty as long as your audience can hear you and trust you.
Yeah, so that's where the fear possibly comes in at, because you think if you turn down this person that you are losing out on something, but you actually are not losing anything.
You're not, because your people, even if you make a huge stance, if somebody feels close enough to what you are really niche down into, they will still find you. I have a lot of clients who work in corporate who want to niche out of corporate, even though I really gear towards busy moms who are mom first. So as long as your message is clear and they resonate with you, they feel like you're the one, they'll still find you. So you don't have to be afraid of not offering every talent that you have. It's really best to niche down to your most profitable and purposeful, add in pleasure in your business, and go really be known for that.
Can you talk a little bit about your four key steps to starting your own ideal high profit business?
Yes, the four key steps. I've switched that up a little bit, and I'm going to put up a new training this weekend, as a matter of fact. It's number one, you want to pinpoint your perfect business idea. That's what we're talking about. It must be profitable, purposeful, and pleasurable for a sustainable business that you can make a lot of money in the time spent. Then you want to make sure that you have access to your targeted audience. A big mistake is picking a business where you don't have access to your people. And this is done a lot. You would be surprised. I see people doing market research that cannot access their ideal clients. Then it's important to command your premium profit. For my clients, we're already busy moms with a full-time mom job that we don't get paid for. And I love money. I love helping my clients make money. I want a amazing lifestyle for my family and luxury travel. And commanding your premium profit is important, because I like to say that we are like fancy boutiques, not like Walmart, that need a lot of clients to make any kind of profit. And finally, you need to craft the right offer, the offer that your clients actually want, your audience wants. And the way you do this is by talking to your audience. A huge mistake is to craft an offer that you, like we talked about earlier, that you just feel passionate about, or that you think sounds fun, or that you think maybe some people would want. That's not good enough. You really have to figure out exactly what your clients need, what their biggest pain points are, and craft an offer to meet that need.
So let's do an example right now. So you have someone in your office, or you're, you know, consulting with someone, and their gifts are, here are some gifts that they have. So they have excellent communication skills, and they are in, let's see, the medical field, right? What is something, take us through a process that you would have with them?
So communication skills is not, I mean, a lot of people have that, and that's not a viable skill that I would turn into a business. It has to go way deeper than that. We would spend a lot more time than that. So that's way too broad. Okay. So a viable skill would be like, okay, in the medical field, let's say they train nurses to do XYZ. I don't know. I know nothing medical, so I'm just going to say they trained nurses to do XYZ, and they have found that this is a huge problem in that area. Or, okay, I have a different idea with this. Let's just say they worked with nurses, and they have found out that nurses feel superbly undervalued. They have a lot of work trauma from being overworked, undervalued, feeling like second-class citizens, even though they do a lot of the work that doctors don't do and administer the medicine, but they're treated poorly or talked down by colleagues, and that causes work trauma. I actually have a client who does this, so this is not that difficult for me. And they are on the brink of quitting a profession that they love because they love treating patients. So this is where you can come in and become a trauma coach or a coach to help them navigate the medical world better so that they can have more job satisfaction, more of a voice, and put more boundaries for themselves so that they can continue to do the work that they love and get the respect that they deserve while in their field, so they don't quit nursing altogether, which is what happens. So that's why it's really important to meet the need. The pain is they're on the brink of quitting their nursing careers because of their treatment. And the solution that my client offers is to coach them through a bunch of mental stuff that helps them create better positioning for themselves and work out the way to set boundaries and to change their perception of the situations so that they can have way higher job satisfaction and continue to serve the patients that they want to.
Wow, good example. I know that sometimes, and you alluded to this moments ago, that when people are frustrated in a certain field that they're in, they tend to just quit. But oftentimes, there are solutions within that that they could bring to light, because not everybody sees everything. So what we see, our disappointment, may be a clue to something that we could change.
That is true. I don't work in the corporate field with this. Like, I don't do corporate coaching, like career coaching. However, I know enough that a lot of times if you're working with, like, just say a jerk boss, or you're in a position that you don't feel respected, often you're not speaking up for yourself. I'm not saying it blanketly. And instead of quitting and being the victim, the first step is to make a plan to assert yourself, to do more boundaries. Like, I'm just going to speak for women. Often women will take over some of the work that other people don't want to do to be nice or pleasing their colleagues' work. And instead of saying, no, I have my own work, this is yours, they feel underappreciated and will not voice it, and instead plot their quitting.
So speaking up is definitely something that should be done. Okay, that sounds good. So what's a typical day like for you? You know, waking up and getting your day started.
I wake up, I work out every morning, and then I make a really great breakfast. I mean, of course, this is after waking up my son and making sure he has his breakfast, lunch, and green shake before school. So this is after this. Then I'll work out. I'll make a really luxury breakfast for my husband and me. And every day I love to make an omelet or a brioche French toast. I'm a big breakfast person. I like to sit and enjoy my latte macchiato with my husband. And then it'll start my work day, which starts with working on my business on most days. And that means my positive journaling, because I still do my mindset work, and serving my clients like gold. That's always my number two. And that means taking client calls or following up with clients. And after that, I do my client acquisition. So that means bringing in more clients, following up with leads, setting up discovery calls, stuff like that. Then I write posts, creative stuff. So I let it flow. I have a plan for my business, and I work that plan 3 days a week. So I've created a business. I usually work 3 days a week. If I want to work on another day, I will do that. I record podcasts like this, and I stagger my weeks. So 1 week I'll do more podcast recordings and my own recordings. And 1 week is usually client calls and really going deep into the creative side, whatever it is. I like to batch out things. And then when my son is out of school, I pick him up and I'm full-time mom.
So what time does your workday typically end?
My workday, well, this week it ended at 1 because my son had early release all week. But usually it ends at 2:15.
Wow. That is great, because oftentimes when people talk about entrepreneurship, they talk about just the struggle of just having to work almost 7 days a week for like 15 hours in order to get your business going. You know, that's definitely different. I don't know if it's because you've already established it, or how does that play?
I do not believe in the hustle. I think that that is a mentality that I did have that in my 20s, just so you know, for my first business that has zero to do with this business. This is where that command your premium profit comes in. I came online, like, before anyone thinks I just had a big audience, I was easily able to transition my offline work to online. When I came online, I had no list. I had no followers. No one knew me. And it did take work, but I don't believe in the hustling of it. That's where being time efficient is really important. When I don't waste time, when I am in my work mode, I'm truly efficient. And yes, I think years of entrepreneurship experience has me, so I know exactly where to laser point my attention. If you don't know this, then it's time to hire a coach so that you don't spin out and waste a lot of time, or get a really, really solid self-study course and be a go-getter and follow the course to a T. And I don't believe in that kind of hustle. I believe in creating businesses that allow me to be mom first. Occasionally, I will at nighttime do a little work if I feel called to, if I feel inspired, when I do things like creative post, or I'll follow up on a client email, or just follow up on stuff. I will do that occasionally, only if I feel like it. And then beyond that, I think that you need to really repurpose. So I'll do a Facebook Live. My podcast person, I do nothing. I believe in outsourcing. I do a Facebook Live for 30 minutes. She pulls that. She turns it into a podcast. She turns it into a training. She transcribes it and I turn it into a post, just like that. She does all the music. She does the sound bites. I believe in outsourcing. All my tech is outsourced because I know nothing about tech. I can barely do anything techy by myself.
Right. Okay. That does save a lot of time.
If you
really are not masterful in certain things, networking and outsourcing is definitely the way to go to save time. What's the name of your podcast?
The Mom First Entrepreneur.
And how often does it air? You release episodes?
Twice a week. It's a brand new podcast that I did out of pleasure. And the only reason I did it is because I barely have to put any extra work into it. I mean, that's the truth. I get to share my message with more people, and somebody else goes in, audits it, edits it, puts in the intro, the outro, schedules it. I know how to do nothing. I don't even know my own password on my podcast. It's on Apple. It's everywhere. She just informs me that we have more listeners. Like, this is the pleasure of outsourcing. So when you can create your, I understand when you're a new entrepreneur that this is way more difficult. This takes bringing in revenue. And when you have the revenue, it is so much easier to outsource certain tasks. One of my clients that came to me, she was really frazzled. She already had a six-figure business when she came to me. She had just adopted a baby and was now a new time mom. And she came to me to help her create a mom first lifestyle. And one of the first things we did was hire a local high school girl to go through her Instagram and answer all her many, many, many messages. And she was so nervous. I get it. I am type A. I tend to be controlling. And by that, I am controlling. And it's hard for me to outsource. I totally get it. And if it's not your specialty while you're growing a business, this is the way to get rid of hustle. You don't have to do everything. when you're bootstrapping and you're not bringing revenue, that's probably not the time to outsource. But if it's holding you back, like I see people BSing that they can't start their business because they don't have their website and they have no idea how to make a website and they've been toiling for it for 4 months. First of all, I'm here to tell you, if you're new to business, you do not need a website to get clients. I've had many clients get their first paying clients with no website. Websites coming down like the line 3 or 4 months down the line. And this is something that if I had to make my website, I would never have a business. Like this is something that I have no specialty in. It would take so much of my energy and add no pleasure. And it's definitely something that I would personally outsource. And same with podcast editing. I would not want to do that. I enjoy speaking. I enjoy communicating. I enjoy sharing and inspiring. I have no idea how to edit a podcast.
Wow. So when you were speaking, I was thinking, even for people who may not, whose businesses may not be profitable currently, they could still outsource some things by utilizing the bartering system because somebody knows something that you don't know. So it's always a way to make it happen if you really need to free yourself from certain tasks.
I do believe that. Okay, there's two belief thoughts on this. Some people do not believe in bartering because they think that cash needs to change hands. Otherwise, you go on a slippery slope of doing work for free. I agree with you that there's nothing wrong with bartering. I have bartered in the past when it is a fair exchange. There's nothing in my eyes wrong with a fair exchange as long as you don't get trapped into always bartering and not charging money. If you have money mindset issues and you are afraid of charging money or you feel like it's bad or wrong, then bartering is not a good choice for you because that's just a way for you to stay in your fear.
True. I agree. So you mentioned you had a son. I don't know how old he is, but do you think that it could be beneficial for especially parents of kids who are entrepreneurs to introduce them into entrepreneurship if, in fact, they are wanting to do something, starting at an early age?
Absolutely. Gray is age 7, and I have been talking to him about owning your own business since he was at most age 4, and he knows a lot about businesses. My husband and I are both entrepreneurial, and he knows a lot about positioning yourself, making profit. I ask him leading questions to stimulate his mind about when he owns his own business, things like that. I lead him that way. And if that's not for him, because I have known people in my circle whose parents were really successful entrepreneurs and they saw the ups and downs with it and it was not for them. So it is up to him. And if I could wave a magic wand, yeah, he'd be an entrepreneur. I like being my own boss, setting my own hours, doing my own thing. And you were surprised with that 2:15 timeline. Usually during that between my workday, I'll take a break to walk my dog.
That is being your own boss and living your best life. No doubt about that, because if you're in a 9-to-5, we know the obstacles that someone could encounter wanting to do things for themselves, you know? So that's really good. So has he gravitated towards anything or tried anything yet? His lemonade stand or anything?
He has asked to do a lemonade stand on numerous occasions, which sounds like a lot of work on my part. So I have not. My husband said he was willing to do it. He wanted to do it for the kids walking to junior high and high school in the morning. I am not a morning person. I will not be getting up early to do lattes and lemonade. However, he's really good at coding, which, as I just shared to you, I cannot do any tech. And my son is very advanced at coding at age 7. And he gets that straight from my husband.
Wow, that is amazing. So that's definitely something that could be profitable for him in the future for sure, if not even now. Yeah. So what's the best way for people to contact you for your services?
You can reach me at shmentrepreneur.com. That's short for Stay at Home Mom Entrepreneur. So SAHM Entrepreneur. And on there is the four key steps to pinpointing your perfect business as a busy mom. And that's the best way to reach me. I'm also on Facebook. I'm in my Facebook group almost daily. You can find me, Kat McLeod. You can find me on there.
Okay. So what's your one to grow on? What valuable piece of information would you like to leave our audience with?
You need to decide on your success. If you truly want success to make it happen, if you truly are going to make it happen, it's a decision. You need to decide on it. It happens when you stop wishing, wanting, hoping. So I kind of misspoke there. It's deciding on success. That's the key to making it happen. Doing this work, being consistent, taking one step in front of the other.
Thank you for listening to The New Mind Creator Podcast with your host, Maurice, The New Mind Creator. This podcast has been sponsored by Abundant Sports and True Serum. Head over to www.mauriceflournoy.com to receive more motivation and insight to help create your new mind.